First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
Confederate statues, racist viral videos, blackface in a local restaurant, the 904, and race. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening as we kick off November on this brisk fall day. Just ahead this hour, we're talking race and racism here in the 904, and we want your calls 549-2937. Then later, how you can bag a free tree this month in Greenscape's annual tree giveaway. That's later on. But first this hour, a rash of racist incidents across the region has leaders on diversity calling for a reckoning. In Nassau County, black students were recently suspended after they physically confronted white students who shared a video on social media where they uttered racial slurs. One of them was wearing a white hood. The Jacksonville City Council may or may not remove a large Confederate statue in Springfield Park, despite years of activism calling for it to be taken down. In St. Johns County, a parent says she may file a federal lawsuit after she claims a teacher repeatedly used the N-word while discussing Huckleberry Finn in class. In Jacksonville, a waitress says she was fired from a restaurant after complaining about a customer who came to a Halloween party wearing blackface. And of course, in Georgia, jury selection continues in the trial of the man accused of murdering Ahmaud Arbery. The prosecution will argue that killing was motivated by racism. And of course, critical race theory isn't even a subject that's taught in Florida schools. It's only taught in law school. Yet many people, misled by misinformation about it, continue to call for it to be banned in their kids' classrooms. There is so much to discuss, so we're pleased to welcome back to the show Dr. Tammy Hodo, Executive Director of All Things Diverse. She's on the line. Dr. Hodo, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
Give us a call as we talk about race in the 904, folks, 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Our Facebook page, always open. Dr. Hodo, just a long list of things that have happened just in the last few weeks to remind us once again how difficult this is for this community. What are your thoughts as I tick through that list?
My heart is hurting, obviously, but I can't say that I'm really surprised. I think that people are feeling really emboldened and empowered, and they feel this sense of entitlement. And we've seen the constant policing of people of color. So I can't say that I'm really surprised, but I am extremely disappointed, especially with the response at the school. For the black teens to be suspended after tussling, which I kind of would anticipate, from that very racist video that they were sent, and for them to be the ones reprimanded is pretty astonishing to me. But then again, that's kind of the status quo that I see in the First Coast.
You're talking about the incident in Nassau County schools in Yulee. The school says that because the black students got physical, that they had to follow school policy and suspend the black students, and that because the video that the white students made was made off campus, that their ability to discipline those students is limited. And so, you know, that's just one incident out of many that have happened in just the last few weeks in our community. This is a systemic problem, a systemic issue. Tell us about your work at All Things Diverse and how you try to start conversations in the community about race and racism.
So what we do at All Things Diverse is we really try to move us from that social construct of race, because race is not biologically real. It's a social construct, but it's something that continues to have real world implications in America. And it impacts life choices and opportunities. And so what we're really trying to do is to deconstruct that and get people to understand that, you know, as a society, we are so much more productive if we focus on our similarities versus our differences. And so we work with organizations to help them really diversify their workforce, to gain an understanding and respect for cultural differences, and to begin engaging in that anti-racism work that is just so important and much needed in our society overall. So it's something that we're really dedicated to, and just educating people, because I think that's one of the issues. And you brought up critical race theory, and just people hear these sound bites and they're not using their critical thinking skills to understand, you know, the different barriers and the systemic issues that we have in our society, and just how much stronger we can be together.
It's 549-2937. Give us a call. You know, Dr. Hodo, as you talk about anti-racism and work to educate the public on what that means, we're also seeing, not just in this community, but really across the country right now, a real backlash to people who are very hostile to what they describe as woke politics or cultural wokeness. For example, in Virginia right now, it's down to the wire in the election for governor. The election in Virginia will be held tomorrow between Democrat Terry McAuliffe and Republican Glenn Youngkin. Just a few years ago in Charlottesville, Virginia, racist demonstrators marched with tiki torches. Of course, it led to the death of a woman named Heather Heyer. And so that governor's contest is turning on these issues because the backlash is strong in this country when we try to move the conversation forward on issues of race. How do you see that, and how do you see this country moving through that?
I think that oftentimes when we talk about race, we do see a demographic change in our society, and I think what we're seeing is a lot of fear. Minorities are going to be the majority shortly in America, and I think that creates a lot of fear for our European American brothers and sisters. But I just find it ironic, because if everything's been fair and equitable, why is there fear in the change of the demographics in America? So I'm not sure if people think that we will begin to treat people as we have been treated historically. But the reality is that the world is changing, and that we should all embrace this change. But I think that there is a lot of fear, and I think that fear has been stoked by political rhetoric that has been very hateful and very intentional to create this division that we see in society based on things such as that social construct of race, religion, gender identity, and things of that nature.
Mm. There's another recent incident we want to discuss briefly. The mother of a student at St. Augustine High School tells WJCT News her daughter filed a complaint and may have to leave her gifted class after complaining about a teacher's use of the N-word when discussing a great novel, Huckleberry Finn. Here is Mother Helen Jeter telling me about this incident.
She used the pejorative term, which is the N-word, as an adjective describing him, which was common at that time, and it was part of the satire of the author. The problem is that she used the word, which elicited a variety of reactions from students in the class, and many students were stunned, according to my daughter, Natalie. And she felt quite uncomfortable, which led her to advocate for herself, which we're very proud of, and go speak with a dean, who then referred it to the proper administrator to handle.
Helen Jeter says she does not believe the incident was addressed properly. She may even file a lawsuit over this. We will hopefully hear from the St. John's County School District about this incident soon. But Dr. Hodo, I bring this up because so much of this anger in this country right now is focused on our schools, whether it's incidents like the one we just heard from, the non-existent teaching of critical race theory in schools. It does not exist. Anger over mass mandates. The backlash seems to be so centered on schools. Your thoughts?
Well, the education system, the father of the Common Core of Education was Horace Mann, and the belief was that it was going to be the great equalizer. But I think that we've continued to see that there are disparities very much based on socioeconomic status and the quality of the schools within certain districts. I definitely believe that you know, we need to have these conversations. I think that the teacher in St. John's County could have said, you know, this word was used, but we're going to refer to it as the N-word. I don't think the word should be removed from the book because it was relevant and that was a word that was used at that time. But I think it also shows the level of hate as well as misunderstanding towards African Americans, but it's relevant during that time. But to continuously stand there and use the word is not advantageous or does not create a culture that is conducive for these students to learn.
Go ahead.
And I said, and as you mentioned, I find it, funny, actually, that people have these strong feelings about critical race theory, and they are so misinformed because it's not taught in the K-12 system. And I'm struggling as a biracial person in America with this thing about, is it heritage or is it hate? Because if it's heritage and not hate, then why are you so afraid of teaching the true history of America, which is very much based on that social construct of race, the genocide of our indigenous population, Japanese internment camps, hatred towards Irish, Polish, and Italian when they initially came. I just really struggle with that. Do we want to teach the truth to ensure that we don't repeat that? Or do we want to sugarcoat it to make everyone feel warm and fuzzy?
Right. I recommend for people who feel they haven't gotten the full education in school and they have to sort of make it up as an adult, which I think is common for many Americans, Howard Zinn's classic, A People's History of the United States, tells the accurate story of this country. So check that out. 549-2937. April in Fleming Island. Hi, April. Go ahead, April. You're on
the
air.
Hi,
Melissa. How are you?
Great.
I'm calling. I'm a parent, an African-American parent, and I live in Fleming Island. And yesterday, my son got his first car. And when we got home, one of the things that he was concerned with was how to respond when he would be pulled over by the police. And we literally had to go through a training in my house about how he should respond, keep his hands on the steering wheel, let the officer know every move he was making in order for him to not be shot because of maybe just being pulled over for something minor. And so I think that also is a problem here in our country. Again, what Dr. Hodo was saying is just one of the things that really saddens me is that with all that we have accomplished, I still have to have those types of conversations with my black son to make sure that he would get home safely from wherever he went as he drives his car for the first time. So that was just my comment on that.
Thanks, April. And I'm sorry that that's a talk you have to have with your son, Dr. Hodo.
Well, and Dr. Murdaugh, I know April quite well, and I also have an African-American son, and we have what's called Life 360 on our phones. Our son is a sophomore at Florida State, and we track his moves, and it's the same thing. We had to have that talk when you're stopped, and it's really not if you're stopped. And by no means am I anti-police. I used to be a probation officer. I relied on them. I know that the vast majority are good. But I think the problem is that we have that lack of integration. If you look at Jacksonville, we sit at a 56 on the index of dissimilarity, which means this is not truly an integrated city. You want to be closer to one. It goes from 1 to 100. And so what happens is we're not engaging with people outside of our communities. And we all have biases, whether we want to acknowledge them or not. And if we depict or if we are understanding of certain cultures and communities is based off of the media, oftentimes it is not a good image. And just like Dr. Murdaugh, I also had to have that conversation with my son, but I found some states are actually stopping the police from doing those minor traffic stops because they do recognize, as she indicated, that people of color are more prone to have issues, whether they be shot, tased, arrested for minor offenses.
I think it's important that you just said that this isn't an indictment of the police. This is an indictment of society, which police are a part of. If we all have unconscious biases, that includes people who aren't sworn law enforcement and people who are. people who are sworn law enforcement carry a gun and a badge. And so it's a lot more fraught when a law enforcement officer and someone who is pulled over for speeding or whatever the offense may be, it's a more fraught, dangerous situation if, like everyone else in society, officers carry these implicit biases that we're all raised with. And so I just thought it was important to clarify that, because certainly right now police feel they're being attacked. They feel on the defensive. They feel they're all being painted with the same brush, accused of racism and such. This is a systemic issue, which you talk about a lot, Dr. Hodo. Lots of calls, 549-2937. Tom on the West Side. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. I just wanted to say that while we were protesting, while we were picketing outside of Culhane's yesterday, we received a lot of support, and that's really encouraging. On the negative side, the collapse of the Safer Together Committee.
That's another issue. I forgot to mention that one.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Tom.
The aspect of how that impacts on the black community is a little troublesome.
Yeah, thank you for that. I completely forgot to add that to my long list, Tom. Thank you. The effort at criminal justice reform in Jacksonville fell apart a few weeks ago when Councilman Michael Boylan quit. Said that he didn't want to do it anymore. That upset a lot of people. Now, let me reference what that caller mentioned about the restaurant. A little later in the hour, we will hear from Nina Ward, a UNF student and a waitress who says she was fired from Culhane's Irish Pub after complaining about a customer who appeared at a Halloween event at the restaurant in blackface. Here's an email from Ed. He says, if someone who is black dresses up as a white person, is that racist or inappropriate? Let's talk about blackface for a minute, Dr. Hodo, and why it's so offensive to people of color, because we continue to get questions about this. People, you know, not understanding what the big deal is, not seeing this as something worthy of leaving in the dustbin of history. Can you talk about this?
Sure. Blackface has been around in the U.S. since the 1800s, you know, after the end of slavery, and it is very demoralizing. It has been used to depict African Americans as lazy buffoons. They often paint their faces black with these really big red accentuated lips and big eyes. It is never okay to wear someone's complexion. That beautiful melanin skin that we have is not a costume. It is never okay to wear someone's, like we see this often too with our indigenous population, our Hispanic population, someone's culture is not a costume. When I want to dress up, if I wanted to be Barbie or anything that is very Eurocentric, which is pretty standard in America, I do not paint my brown face white. I wear the costume and people actually know who I am. And it could be the same for European Americans. If this lady was Tina Turner, she could have put on a wig, she could have worn a certain attire, and they would have known who she was. To put on blackface, or as per what I heard Cohan say, dark bronzer, that's rather offensive. I often want to ask the question of my European American brothers and sisters, how many of you all are willing to change places with us and actually be our color versus just for that one day?
You know, this whole issue is fascinating because people who become angry when they're challenged on things like blackface will point out hypocrisies on the left. For example, you know, Megyn Kelly of Fox was hired by NBC News and then fired after she made a really insensitive comment on the air about blackface. Right. Immediately, conservatives said, well, what about Jimmy Kimmel or Ted Danson or even Joy Behar from The View? They all appeared in blackface and nothing happened to them. Why does cancel culture only happen on the right, they might say. And so this is how these conversations get politicized, and they really do animate a lot of the anger on the right. Rather than understanding how people of color might feel about this, they turn it to that conversation, that argument. I'm wondering what you think about that.
Well, I think this goes to, we know Black lives don't matter. I mean, when Black people, you know, people of color speak up and say something, you know, we, the commentary is, well, always, well, what about Black on Black crime? You know, well, what about white on white crime? It's geographically based. You know, when Ted Danson was in blackface, there was a lot of backlash. I remember that. He was on stage with Whoopi Goldberg, and I think they were intimate or whatever. You know, they were dating or whatever. And that was not okay. And I'm sure had they spoke with people in the African-American community, they would have expressed their disdain for that as well. So I don't understand how it gets so politicized, because it's all about just divisiveness. And we as a nation really need to come together. You know, it just makes no sense to me why we continue to see the amount of hate crimes. And when you look at the statistics, the number one is solely based on race, ethnicity, and ancestry bias. And then we have the religious bias, our Jewish brothers and sisters, our Muslim brothers and sisters, and just, you know, people not understanding other people's cultures, religions, and that those aren't costumes. Those are not things for you to take and make your own. And there's a saying we often hear in the Black community, they love our culture, but they surely don't love us.
Mm. Dave in Nassauville. Hi, Dave. Good morning.
My call.
Yeah, go ahead.
What I see happening is this idea that there's a lot of shame in the white community about the treatment of Blacks, although nobody wants to really admit that there's that shame, because there has been institutional racism for a long time. And there's this attitude that people that know that there have been inequities and there has been unfairness and there has been a number of ways in which people of color have been marginalized, but the attitude is that, well, okay, we had a Black president, racism is over, let's move on. And that's an unfortunate but common short-sighted mindset that a lot of people, particularly those on the right, have. I take my response off the air.
Thank you, Dave. 549-2937. Rosa on the West Side. Go ahead, Rosa.
Hello. Hello. So my opinion about this whole situation at Darnell Cookman with this teacher and this young lady is the only reason I'm calling is because I had a discussion with my daughter who happens to know this young lady personally. First of all, she's
I think you're talking about a different incident, Rose. I'm not. Can you explain a little bit more?
The incident that happened with the teacher that was discussing Of Mice and Men. I think it was Of Mice and Men, the
yeah,
book.
Yeah, that's a different incident than the one we were just talking about in St. John's County, but go ahead.
Okay. I'm sorry about that. Okay.
No problem.
And so my daughter is 13 years old. She comes from, I am first generation Mexican American, and so is my husband, and my daughter, obviously second generation Mexican American. Particularly for our family, my husband and I really never had any incidents because we were raised in California. It wasn't until we came here to Jacksonville where these things were a little bit more in our face. And now that, you know, we had our daughters here in Jacksonville, they're faced with dealing with racism and the meaning of what it is, or actually understanding what it is. And so we've tried very hard to tell them, you know, I don't want you to be judging people based on the color of their skin, but it's repeatedly an issue here for whatever reason. And it's just so unfortunate, both for the teacher who handled it very poorly and for this young lady who actually made a comment online. And what my daughter told me was that the teacher actually read it from a book. She didn't say it, mm-hmm. nor discuss it. And obviously, if you've read the book, it's an amazing book. I read it myself.
Are you talking about Huckleberry Finn?
I think it was Of Mice and Men.
Yeah, Rosa. Either one, you know, they're classics of literature that were written in a different era. Sure.
Exactly. And that's exactly what my point was with my daughter. So this is what my 13-year-old daughter said. She says, but Mom, it shouldn't even be read off of a book. It's so offensive. It shouldn't be read off of a book. And I told my daughter, I said, no, these are actual things that happen. We have a whole different issues that happen with our own race. I started, just naming off names like Cesar Chavez and just a whole random other section, other things that have happened to us as minorities, as Mexican Americans. I said, but these things happened and we can't like turn our face away from them. It's good that you're learning about this. It shouldn't be used against, minorities or blacks or Mexicans or Asians. It's just such a shame that we take these things and it destroys people's lives. Like this teacher, she's a very good teacher, obviously, what I've heard. And she handled something so poorly and, in essence, ruined a little bit of her career, right? Mm. I don't know what's going to happen to her.
Right.
But then this little girl who I'm sure, understands it and tried, to say, oh, my goodness, they're giving an award to the teacher who uses the N-word and completely takes it out of context because actually what happened is she read it off of a book. So how do you handle those things? It's frustrating.
I know it. Thank you, Rosa. Thank you so much for sharing all of those thoughts. Dr. Hodo, let's close with your thoughts about that.
I think the gentleman who called before Rosa, I would like to address, and I totally agree with him. I think that there's a lot of shame, but people need to understand this is not about shame or guilt. This is the history of our country. And yes, there has been a lot of privilege, and people have benefited from, this very systemic issue that deals with that social construct of race. And when we had Obama as president, I heard the same thing, we've got a black president. President Obama is just like myself. He is biracial. I have never in my life met a biracial person who identifies as black or white. We identify as biracial. And in regards to what Rosa said, I agree. I think that the teacher should be able to, it's written in the book, but I think you have to put it in the correct context and explain to the students. And it also depends, though, on how the teacher enunciates that. And we know that language matters. And sometimes the way people enunciate things, you can tell, is very disparaging. So that also matters. So I would say, yes, this is the term that was used at that time. I would probably use it one time, and then after that, I would use the N-word, and I am a person of color, and I would do that. But I would make sure that my students were educated that this is real. This is our history. This is what our nation was built upon, and in order not to repeat these things, we have to address them.
Always great to have you on. Dr. Tammy Hodo, who heads up All Things Diverse and consults on these issues, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Melissa.
Much more still ahead. Later, no treats, just tricks for the Jaguars over Halloween. Our Josh Torres will talk sports, but up next.
Friday, October 22nd, Carl Haynes was hosting a costume contest event with a band for customers, and staff was allowed to dress up as well.
We continue the conversation about race in the 904 as a former waitress says she lost her job after complaining about a customer in blackface. That's next.
Mark's Gray, dedicated to helping Florida's businesses manage their complex legal issues for more than 120 years. Marks Gray is proud to support WJCT and public broadcasting. Learn more at marksgray.com. Offices in Jacksonville. Vistar believes that saving money is better, so they don't charge for things like savings or checking, and they have lower rates on loans and credit cards. Learn more about all that Vistar has to offer at vistarcu.org. Citizens Property Insurance. Whether recovering or preparing, Citizens is available. Claims can be tracked at citizensfla.com or reported by calling a live Citizens rep 24/7.
Welcome back. Well, UNF student Nina Ward says she was fired from Culhane's Irish Pub on the South Side earlier this month after she complained about a customer wearing blackface there during a Halloween party event. People upset with this whole issue picketed Culhane's over the weekend. We reached out to Culhane's about this issue and did not get a reply back. But I did speak with Nina, who is Black, about her experience and the ongoing outcry. Here's that conversation. Nina Ward, it's good to talk to you, and thanks for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me.
So your post about your experience as a waitress at Culhane's Irish Pub on Jacksonville's South Side has gotten a lot of attention. Can you tell us what happened? Take us back to the incident that you posted about. What happened?
Yeah, you got it. So Friday, October 22nd, Culhane's was hosting a costume contest event with a band for customers, and staff was allowed to dress up as well. And half, you know, partway through the night, during my shift, a lady comes in wearing blackface. I do a double take. I confirm with my other servers that they see what I'm seeing and that this lady is 100% in blackface. I go up to the lady herself. I ask her, what is she dressed up as? To which she responds proudly, Tina Turner. I explain to her why her costume is offensive, that there was no need for her to paint herself and to overline her lips like that and all this stuff, to which she did not care. And so I stormed to the back of the restaurant, extremely upset to see this woman. And I go to my manager, Christine Moore, and owner, Mary Jane Culhane, expressing my fury and discomfort with this lady, and asked the situation be handled, to which I told it would be. So then I leave and I go back to serving my tables, talking to coworkers. I talked to a Black gentleman at the bar, asking his opinion on the situation. He was equally as furious as me. And so I see that this lady is still being served. I feel that she is still enjoying her time. So I go back again to management. Mary Jane had left at this point without talking to me after the fact. And I was now speaking to Christine Moore, who said that they were not going to do anything about this lady, that Mary Jane handled the situation, and that if I was uncomfortable serving with this woman in the restaurant, that I could transfer my tables and clock out. So that is what I did the following day, or later that night around midnight, 1 a.m, my shift for Saturday, the 23rd, was taken off my schedule, and I was told that that was because I needed time to, quote, relax. And then Saturday, I was told to call into my job, to which I did, to which I was fired in a very brief phone call with no reason by a manager who was not there for the incident that I had worked under for over a year. And that is what happened.
Okay. You know, for those who, for whatever reason, still don't understand this, blackface is extremely offensive and racist because it goes back to the Jim Crow era and the tradition of minstrelsy, when white performers would go on stage in blackface to mock and dehumanize African Americans. And so it is hurtful. It is offensive. It's as offensive, you know, to people of color as using, say, the N-word. And so what are your thoughts about the outcry since all of this has happened?
I think it is amazing the amount of support that I've gotten during all of this from not only members of the Black community, but also, you know, white people, you know, not POCs, also, you know, Asian people, Hispanic people, Indian people, you know, everyone of every demographic and walk of life has acknowledged the has acknowledged how offensive this is and how wrong this is and how this is absolutely unacceptable behavior, you know, and that is really amazing to see.
That's good to hear. Now, what's your reaction to those who defended Culhane's and said that the customer is always right? In other words, as the rationale for not asking that diner to leave.
It's frustrating, and you know, it is disheartening that people can still find a way to try to defend something so blatantly wrong. You know, as businesses, restaurants have the right to refuse service for any reason. There is no excuse that this woman was still allowed to be served. But with any issue, no matter how black and white it may seem, and no matter how clearly there is a right side, no one will ever 100% agree. So while it's extremely frustrating and disheartening, I am not letting it get to me, and I am not entertaining these people that are going to have these opinions no matter what I say.
Have you picked up a waitress job anywhere else?
At the moment, not yet. I have been offered many jobs. I have been put in contact with so many people. Like, thankfully, I have options, but with everything going on, it has been a very overwhelming past couple of days and getting everything sorted. So I have not had time to figure out what my next step is in terms of a job.
Well, we'll check back with you. UNF student Nina Ward, thanks for sharing your story.
Absolutely.
Well, here's something great. Greenscape's annual tree giveaway is coming up this month. It's your chance to get your hands on up to 3 free trees for your home or business. Now, the great Greenscape tree giveaway is happening in conjunction with a paper recycling and shredding event from Keep Jacksonville Beautiful. Lisa Gruba is Interim Executive Director of Greenscape of Jax. Hey, Lisa, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
So this is one of the most anticipated events of the year. I mean, who doesn't like free stuff? And you're giving away trees. So tell us about the tree giveaway.
Absolutely. We have been doing this for 32 years in Jacksonville. And this year, Greenscape is partnering with Keep Jacksonville Beautiful to do both a tree giveaway and a paper collection event. Now, last year, they shredded on site. This year, they're just collecting the bags of paper, and they will take them off-site to shred, which will keep it moving a little faster. So the public can bring up to 2 30-gallon bags of paper documents, and you can either go through the recycle line or the tree line or the recycle plus free tree line. And we will be giving away 3 trees. You can choose from a Schumard oak, a winged elm, redbud, crepe myrtle, holly, or cypress tree.
All beautiful. Yeah.
Right.
And this is happening at Lot E at TIAA Bank Field. That's the lot where the Florida Georgia RV City typically takes up residence. And, you know, Lisa, with the pause on curbside recycling, this is a good opportunity for people who want to recycle, too.
Very much so. And last year, we had a lot of attendance. And so this year, we will have more JSO traffic officers in order to keep the line moving quickly. So, you know, come on down to TIAA Bank Field and pick up your trees and drop off some documents.
Can you talk a little bit about this tradition? Greenscape of Jacksonville has been doing this for decades, and it's all about increasing the tree canopy in this city. Can you talk about your mission and why that's so important?
Greenscape's mission is to plant, protect, and promote. And we are the oldest tree planting organization in the city. We were founded by 2 philanthropists in order to beautify the city and to, you know, provide the ecological benefits that trees provide. And planting on private land is one way of increasing the urban tree canopy in Jacksonville. Getting trees into the hands of private property owners is just one more way of increasing the number of trees. In fact, we have a board member who picked up a 3-gallon tree at one of our events 20 years ago, and today it shades her entire front yard. So it's a great benefit for the public in terms of shade for their yards or water uptake. If you have a low spot in your yard and you need some water, you know, absorbed, trees are basically pumps. And so planting trees can provide a lot of different benefits.
And, you know, as the big UN climate conference begins today in Glasgow, this is a simple way everyone can do their part by adding to the tree canopy. The more trees we have, the more carbon we capture.
That's right.
Now, Lisa, these are not big trees. These are saplings, essentially. You can take them home in your car, right?
And that's right.
And people might need help, instructions on how to plant them. Do you provide that?
We absolutely do. We, on the tree tag, will be instructions for planting. Now, in past years, the urban forestry team from the city of Jacksonville has been on site in addition to University of Florida Extension agents to talk to the public. We're not doing that this year because of COVID concerns. So the whole event will be contactless and drive-through. You basically will pop your trunk and volunteers will load up the trees. But we will provide information on our social media channels and on our website about best practices for planting and watering the tree.
You can learn more at greenscapeofjax.org. We're speaking right now with Lisa Gruba, Interim Executive Director of Greenscape of Jacksonville, about their upcoming Great Tree Giveaway. They're going to give away up to 2,000 free trees to the public. Keep Jacksonville Beautiful will also be on site. They will collect up to 2 30-gallon bags of paper documents per car. They will either recycle your paper or shred your paper. If you have been fretting over the lack of curbside recycling lately in Jacksonville, this is one way you can do something about that. You're already getting calls, Lisa, because you're so popular about
That's
the
right.
tree giveaway. And Mark tweets the show, please give the date and time for the tree and recycling event. Let's say it again. This is the annual free tree giveaway from Greenscape and a paper collection event in partnership with Keep Jacksonville Beautiful. This is coming up Saturday, November 13th, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., Lot E, TIAA Bank Field. It's, if you know where the RV City is, Florida-Georgia game, it's over there. It's Lot E across from TIAA Bank Field. People just drive through, as you said, Lisa. They never even have to leave their car.
That's right. And we also welcome volunteers. We have many, many volunteers who help out at the event. And so you can go to our website at greenscapeofjax.org to sign up to volunteer. If you're a high school student, we do give service hours. So you'll get a nice chunk of service hours on Friday afternoon or Saturday morning or both. And so we appreciate our volunteers and are looking forward to seeing a return of many of our favorite volunteers again.
Oh, that's also great to note. Again, Greenscape of Jax. Not this coming Saturday, but next Saturday, November 13th, from 9 a.m. to 1, come drive through Lot E at TIAA Bank Field, pick up to 3 free trees for your home or business, and recycle or shred all of your paper. Lisa Gruba.
And Melissa, the reason that we partner with Keep Jacksonville Beautiful for this is they're celebrating America Recycles Day, which is a national day. We're celebrating Jacksonville's Arbor Day. The National Arbor Day is typically in April, but that's late in the planting season in Florida. So that's why we do it in November, which is earlier in the planting season. That gives your tree a good chance to get established before the heat of the summer.
Excellent. Again, Saturday, November 13th, Lot E, TIAA Bank Field, 9 a.m. to 1, the Great Tree Giveaway. Lisa Gruba of Greenscape. Have fun.
Thanks a lot, Melissa.
Speaking of the stadium, it wasn't any treats over Halloween weekend, only tricks for the Jaguars. Josh Torres will tell us about the Halloween massacre by the Seahawks next.
Lee & Kate's Glass, family-owned and operated for 95 years. Lee & Kate's Glass is your source for upgrading your home's glass, from shower doors and mirrors to windows and tabletops. Learn more at leeandkatesglass.com. Cindy Tomasetti of Engel & Volkers is committed to her customers. Whether it's buying or selling, Cindy uses decades of experience in real estate and marketing to deliver five-star service. Information at NortheastFloridaRealtor.com. Teach returns to the First Coast on Saturday, November 13th at the Hyatt Regency Jacksonville. This day-long conference for educators of all grades features keynote presentations from Ron Clark and Dr. Talithia Williams, along with 21 concurrent breakout sessions from local educators. Visit wjct.org/teach for additional details and to get your tickets now.
On the next Fresh Air, filmmaker Edgar Wright. His movies include Baby Driver and Shaun of the Dead. His newest is a thriller called Last Night in Soho. It's about a young woman who is transported in her dreams into the swinging 60s of London, where she lives out the life of another woman. At first thrilling, the dreams become nightmares that haunt her waking hours. Join us.
Today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
Higher inflation is starting to hit home. From gas to groceries, prices are going up, and it's threatening to turn a simmering economic issue into a major political one.
I don't have a near-term answer.
Can the Biden administration find a fix? Your stories as we focus on inflation next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, the sports complex was jumping this weekend with the Florida-Georgia game, but sadly there were no treats for Jaguars fans yesterday, only tricks, thanks to a big loss to the Seattle Seahawks. Our sports analyst, Josh Torres, watched all the action and has some ideas about it. Hey, Josh.
Hey there, Melissa.
Okay, so tell us about the big L, yet another one, by the Jaguars.
Yes, unfortunately. The Jags were coming off of their bye week after getting their first win against Miami. And they traveled to Seattle to take on the Seahawks, you know, obviously with the hope that they could keep that momentum going from getting that first win. And they did not. This was not a good game in any sense of the word. Again, a lot of the same mistakes the team has just been making all year. And now I will give them a little bit of you know, benefit of the doubt, because the fact Seattle is a very tough place to go and play. Their fans are known for being very, very loud and making it a very tough atmosphere. But it was just the simple mistakes, guys not being able to get lined up correctly, getting called for offsides, false starts. The very simple things that have been plaguing this team all year just continued after this bye week. And even Urban Meyer was almost perplexed by it. You know, he even said, I thought we had a really great week of practice. It seemed like we were all fired up and ready to go. And then we kind of came in and almost fell flat on our faces. Trevor Lawrence was 32 for 54. He had 238 yards. He had a touchdown, but it came at the tail end of the game. I think there was only about a minute and 40 seconds left on the clock when most of the Seattle starting defense is already out. And he also threw his ninth interception of the season. It was just a very bad game for the team overall. There were a lot of dropped passes, miscommunications. And on the interception, you could clearly tell that he was expecting his receiver to go one way and his receiver went the other way. So he threw it right to a defender. It was just a very bad game, especially for Trevor. It's the same thing we've been saying all year, where it sucks because you can tell the talent is there, but then you just see these games happen.
And yet Urban Meyer survives with all these losses and his personal scandals. What about that?
Right now, as I said, after the win, I think he's going to survive for a little while. But, you know, this weekend, Bills Mafia is coming to town. That is going to be a very tough game that I personally, and I think a lot of fans, as I've seen on Twitter, do not expect the Jags to do well in. And if these losses keep piling up, I thought maybe after getting that first win, they would at least keep some of these games coming up close. Urban Meyer might survive it to the end of the season. But if they play like they did yesterday, I do not see him surviving the end of the season, because they got a very tough stretch of games coming up very soon. But like I said, this weekend they are taking on the Buffalo Bills and Bills Mafia. So everybody, make sure you lock up your plastic tables. Otherwise, they might end up broken in half somewhere in a parking lot. And, you know, the Jags ultimately yesterday lost 31-7 to the Seahawks, and this week is not shaping up to be any different.
Okay. Sad news as we kick off November, but let's talk college football. The world's largest outdoor cocktail party took over the sports complex as they always do this weekend.
Oh, yes. And it was a packed house. You know, this game's always big for Jacksonville, especially when you talk to people who have just moved here. We have a lot of people who are moving here lately when they ask you, what's Florida Georgia like? And you kind of just go, you have to come and see it. Like, it is one of those things where you have to see it to realize how big it is for Jacksonville. Georgia was coming into this game undefeated, ranked number one. Florida was trying to put Georgia on the upset alert and give them their first loss of the season. Anthony Richardson started for the Gators. This is a move that fans have been asking all season. You know, Emory Jones hasn't been playing particularly bad, but he also hasn't been lights out. So a lot of people wanted to see Anthony Richardson, and he got the start. And it took about 2 minutes for the Bulldogs defense to turn this game on its heels. They were, you know, Bulldogs were up about 3-0 going late into the first half. And then they forced 3 turnovers, including a pick six in just a little under 2 minutes that turned the game from being a 3-0 Bulldog lead to a 24-0 lead going into the half. And Georgia would hold on to that lead for the rest of the game, winning 34-7 and keep their undefeated record going while the Gators are dropped to 4-4. They're 500 on the season, and Dan Mullen's seat is starting to get hotter and hotter by the second, especially after yet another loss to a rival team. And just, it seems like it, whatever he's doing right now is just not working. And so his seat is definitely going to be a lot hotter.
Okay. A little bit of time left. Let's talk hockey.
Yes. This is actually, unfortunately, everybody, this is going to be a little bit of some rather bad news. This is a report that came out about Florida Panthers head coach Joe Quenneville, who was forced to resign after a report was released detailing something that happened during his time as the Chicago Blackhawks coach. A former player, Kyle Beach, had accused a former video coach of sexually assaulting him while he was with the team in 2010, and the team was made aware of it, and they, according to this report, that actually the team participated in and asked for, they did nothing. They, you know, even Joe Quenneville, who was the head coach at the time, was told about it and essentially said, we're in the playoffs right now, we can't deal with this. And they waited till after the playoffs were done before they basically gave that coach an ultimatum.
And long story short, he lost his job.
Yep.
He's out. Okay. All right. Well, that's unfortunate. But I want to thank you for updating all our listeners. Lots of sports always as we discuss it every Monday. Thank you, Josh Torres.
Thank you, Melissa.
And that's our show. I'm Melissa Ross. Have a great Monday. Be safe. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.